D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The college football playoff continues tonight. Notre Dame, Penn State, in the Orange Bowl. You can hear that on this station starting at 6:30. And to discuss the college football playoff, college football editor from The Athletic, Mitch Light, joins us on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mitch, I want to start with Notre Dame because after they lost in week two to Northern Illinois, they were 28.5-point favorites in that game. I'm going to be honest with you. I kind of forgot about Notre Dame for a while. And the way they've been playing since then, and especially in the college football playoff, has been incredibly impressive. How has Notre Dame been able to brush off that horrendous loss early in the season and get to this point in the college football playoff?
Yeah, it's been very impressive. And I credit Marcus Freeman, the staff, Riley Leonard. But even in the weeks after that game, there's still a lot of noise around Notre Dame. You know, Riley Leonard threw two interceptions that game. He really wasn't playing well midseason. There's a lot of rumblings, boosters, in the NIL area. You know, what are we paying this guy for? Mad at the staff for their evaluation, basically 2 years in a row, bringing in a transfer that at this point didn't really pan out. But they just, not to be cliche and all that, they just kind of stayed the course. And they just, their statistics from after that Northern Illinois game through the rest of the regular season, I believe they led the nation in total offense and total defense from that point on. Now, they didn't play the most difficult schedule, but they took care of business. They were just consistently strong, and they just kind of closed all the noise and just took – and, people like us doubted them, said there's no way they can make the playoff with that blemish on their schedule, and they did it, and they've been very good throughout. They've been very opportunistic in the Georgia game, especially. All credit to Marcus Freeman and that staff.
So his counterpart in the Orange Bowl, James Franklin, coach of the Penn State Nittany Lions, I thought I'm just setting it up. I'm just setting it up. Either way, James Franklin had a little bit of a jab at Marcus Freeman talking about Notre Dame's independent status, because Franklin said that he thinks a larger CFP ultimately requires more uniformity around college football. He said, I think everybody should be in a conference. I think everybody should play a conference championship game, or nobody should play a conference championship game. I think everybody should play the same number of conference games. Now, Notre Dame, their independent status is, central to its identity. Sure. What do you make of Franklin's quip there?
I think James Franklin should, coach his own team, worry about his own team, and it's not prevented. When has Notre Dame ever prevented Penn State from accomplishing anything? I can't even think of a scenario where 2 years in a row Penn State didn't get into a 12-team field because Notre Dame, being an independent, didn't play a conference championship game, didn't. I agree it's kind of weird that the way things are structured, but college football has always been weird. It's sort of the charm of it. It's the absurdity of it with the huge conferences and the realignment, but for the most part, you got some leagues have had 12 teams, ACC for a while had 8 teams, then 9 teams. You got some independents. I think it's part of the charm. I can understand James Franklin's point. It seemed to be weird at this time when his team is finally kind of broken through, is in the spotlight, for him to come off sounding a little bitter about it. Maybe I'm misreading it, but I just, again, worry about your own team.
Mitch, I think part of his thing was, at least how I understood people explaining it afterwards, he's talking about the split that has to be done with conferences in regards to the monies. Notre Dame doesn't have to split with anybody because they're not in a conference. And what Franklin is saying is, okay, we got to split the money with the Big Ten. Texas got to split the money with the SEC, but the $14 million that Notre Dame gets, they don't get to split it with anyone. They get to take that money and then use it on their NIL. And I get it, and I understand that part, but I think that's what he was more so a part of what he was alluding to, that people do agree. That's why, other coaches, maybe not now, But this has been a talk with Notre Dame since I was in college about them joining a conference.
Yeah, I get that. That's fair. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But again, it just if it was more prevalent, and I'm not saying mm-hmm. Notre Dame deserves special treatment, but if there were three Notre Dames out there and more independents getting more percentage of the money, like I just think it's just the timing again is
exactly.
weird because he's finally broken through and should be celebrating his team's achievements. And I like James Franklin. Obviously, he's a very good coach. He's done very well at both stops. To me, and now from the outside looking in, he just always seems to be so concerned what his program doesn't have rather than what it does have. Like, Penn State is one of the great programs in college football. Unbelievable fan base. But it's just always our NIL this. Mm-hmm. Just always seems to be so concerned, again, what his program doesn't have. And, you know, rather than appreciating what they do have.
It is part of what makes him unique and successful, because I can remember, and Mitch, you can yeah. as well, his drive. Like, I think David Williams, you know, granted him the indoor mm-hmm. practice facility that had been lacking for years and years
right.
that he wanted. And I thought it was amusing, and I think David Williams did too, was they had barely, you know, said, Coach Franklin, mm-hmm. we're going to give you the indoor practice. Okay, but what's next? You know, he was like, don't you know we're still so far behind everybody else? You know, he that's what drives him, though, that it's never – I agree 100% with what you're saying there, Mitch. And I also think it's funny. He thinks everybody should play the same amount of conference mm-hmm. games. He was fighting to keep 8 conference games when he was with Vanderbilt because he knew that gave them a better pathway to scheduling the way he wanted to make sure that they got wins and could build the program. And I bought the argument a lot, but I think it's interesting that he's different places, different times. You can change your views.
No doubt. And, I mean, coaches should always be looking out for themselves and their program. I mean, you can go back and find a college basketball coach who's in the ACC. The ACC is the best league. It's the best league, you know, hardest venues, and it goes to the SEC or the Big 12. It's by far the best league and all that stuff. Like, I'm not picking on Buzz Williams. I have no idea, but I was just thinking about him earlier because I watched Texas A&M last night. I bet when he was at Marquette, Big East, best league in the country. ACC, best league in the country. SEC, best league in the country. So you're going to promote your own league, your own team, and I don't blame them for that type of stuff.
Now, of the 4 remaining head coaches, who do you think – and this is not about – you know, firing. It just has nothing to yeah. do with you know, if they don't win, they will be on a hot seat. I don't think if any one of these guys lose, I don't think then they're on a hot seat. I think all of them got their program in a place where they're going to continue to win for years to come. But in saying that, which coach do you believe is sort of, you know, it's one of those deals where you're going to have to win moving forward, or else, you know, the fan base may be on you just a tad bit. So who has more to lose, in a sense, between these 4 coaches?
I'm going to turn it around a little bit. I think Ryan Day has the most to gain.
Okay.
Like, basically the same point. It's like, I think because of losing to Michigan all those years in a row and how bad that was this year, sure, they love these last 2 games. They've been great against Tennessee and Oregon. But if they lose in this game, there's going to be a portion of that fan base, you know, that won't forget what happened against Michigan, won't forget the failures to win a national championship. So I think Ryan Day still has the most pressure on him to win. I think every coach you can – we're at the top of the sport here. All these guys have a ton of pressure. I would put Sark on the bottom end of that as far as – I just think he's done such a great job. Shedding so much baggage with that program at Texas that we saw in the last 10, 15 years, how they couldn't break through to go to the playoff 2 years in a row. So obviously it'd be great for all these coaches' careers, job security, all that to win. But I put Ryan Day as the most to gain, and then I put Sark on the other end of that spectrum.
Not to mention Ohio State and Day, they do have the highest payroll now that Oregon is out. They do have the highest payroll in college football.
They're also a victim of this recent success, too.
Yeah.
It's like,
mm-hmm.
I think as fans of any sport, whatever sport our team, we want to see our team play to its best potential. And you understand if you're, you know, whatever your situation is. That's the frustration of Ohio State fans. They knew how good this roster was, and then you see how good they played, how well they played the last 2 weeks, and you're like, why are we not playing that well every week? Why can we not do that against Michigan? So I think it's also like he has to win now even more because they showed how good they can be at their best.
Mitch Light, college football editor for The Athletic. Mitch, speaking of Texas, interesting storyline, and this is just a natural progression of all of the NIL stuff, but you had a lot of these whispers of the minute Texas loses, there's going to be a huge push. Hey, do you want to go into the portal? We'll pay you huge money. We know Arch Manning is on the rise for Texas. And I thought he handled himself pretty well in the game against Arizona State, but I just wonder how that affects a kid with, you know, trying to win a championship when you kind of know this is out there. And this is, we're talking about, I think you guys reported or other people, $6 million or something like that has been floating out there.
Yeah, we didn't report that. We were just a little more, I guess, conservative with throwing out NIL dollars because it's so hard to confirm and verify. Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, that he Quinn Ewers has a great head on his shoulders. He's a mature kid. When you are the number one recruit in the country in your class, and for a while he had a perfect score in the composite rankings of like 1.00. Like there's only been like four of those all time. Like I don't think he ended up there, but point being, he has been a big name in recruiting circles and college football circles since his freshman, sophomore year in high school. Goes to Ohio State, goes to Texas. So he is used to the spotlight. That being said, I don't know how it doesn't affect you when you're deciding, you know, he's thinking about his future and he needs to decide quickly after this game. Is he going to come back to Texas? Is he going to go to the NFL draft? Or is he going to go in the portal? And there have been conversations. I know that with other, not think he has, but with other schools. It's not, these aren't just rumors. Again, like you said, he played well against Arizona State. I thought he played very, very well. He's, you know, he's doing it with the most famous backup quarterback, looking over his shoulder there. So I would expect him to play well. I don't think it'll really affect, but if he doesn't play well, will people throw this out there? I don't know. But it's as you mentioned, it's kind of a sign of the times.
Ohio State, they've played at such a high level in these two games. I always wonder how that's going to affect the next game because when I watched Ohio State a few times during the season, they didn't look anywhere near that loose and that sharp. But wow, is it fair to say that Ohio State can hit a level that these other three teams may not be able to?
That's very fair. It's accurate, and I think you made a good point there, Willie, about being loose. Like Ohio State's almost like a professional team. Like you just there's business it just. Not saying they don't have fun playing football. I've made this case about Ohio State a lot of times. It's like the expectations are so high at Ohio State. Like no one's happy unless they win 50-10 every week. And I know there's some SEC schools like that too, but it's just Ohio State, which has been the top dog in the Big Ten. It just seems a little bit different. It's like they don't always look like they're having fun. So credit to Ryan Day, who was facing so much pressure after the Michigan game for getting his team to play loose. And Will Howard had an up-and-down season. He's having fun playing really well. So I think that's probably a key to it. They are playing, you know, I'm not saying by no stretch does Ohio State have house money because their expectations are so high, but they're just playing with a different looseness, whatever, like the term you use. So, yeah, when they're at their best, they're a team without a weakness. You could say the offensive line because of the injuries they've had, but they seem to have sorted that out. So, you know, they have the highest ceiling of the four teams, no doubt about it.
I want to ask you your perspective on the Vanderbilt season. I can remember Adam asking you the question before the Virginia Tech game, the week of the Virginia Tech game. And we were all
7-6, right, with a bowl win, I think.
Yes, that is correct.
We're going to go back and look at the tape. I think I said that.
I'm not sure that that's the case, but you have asked it. You have asked to check the tape before, so we can probably accommodate you there. But I remember Adam asking, and it was purely – an unknown, and I think your answer was reflected that as well. I would be the first to tell you, after what happened last season, I had zero expectations. I didn't know what to think, but to think that they were going to have the season they did, I could not have dreamed, honestly. I hoped for it, but I can't. I don't think you can say enough about how they turned that around. I realize that in today's athletic world, if you change your team over, you can make a pretty radical change, as we're learning. But at the same time, at Vanderbilt, in this league where there were so many comments being made of, does Vanderbilt even want to be in this league anymore? Do they even want to do this? to have that year was really, really special. But maybe if you could put sort of a summary on it.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. I mean, the only thing I would say is in sports, you just never know, obviously. I mean, there's just turnarounds all the time that are unexpected. But the way last season ended, not just, we've seen some poor Vanderbilt teams, but if you look at the margins of defeat last year and just the body language, and Clark Lee has talked a lot about this year, the body language last year, specifically the Kentucky game, and how the program and that staff, how they just sort of reinvented the way they go about it from a developmental program to, you know, recruiting and develop to hitting the portal hard. And they obviously struck gold at the quarterback position and with the coaching staff changes they made. So, very, very surprised. And it's just like you throw out this word culture all the time. It's overused, but it's important. That's my concern with every team that is very portal heavy is the culture, because you can bring in 20 guys. Let's say you bring in 20 guys, 18, 19 can be great, fit your program, fit your identity, but you bring one guy in who doesn't, can disrupt the locker room. And we've seen that. I think that happened at Florida State to some degree. So yeah, tons of credit for Vanderbilt. I think they've done a really good job this offseason. I think Gunnar Hansen, the left tackle, is really the only guy that they lost through the portal that you'd say, yes, would definitely have been a starter last year. They still have some holes to fill. I'm sure they'll be active in the spring there. But all the credit to Clark Lee and that staff.
Now, looking at Alabama, Mitch, they had their right guard transfer. They had two linebackers that transferred. Now, the right guard, he wasn't the best. But he had been a starter for this Tide team, who was bad across the board from an offensive line standpoint. Are we going to see sort of like what we're seeing with Florida State, where guys are leaving in droves because they don't see the program improving? I'm not saying that Alabama is going to, go into dumpsters or anything else, but this isn't the Alabama team that we're used to seeing. They fired their defensive coordinator, not too long ago. Yep. What we saw the product on the field wasn't a reminiscent of what we're used to. Are we going to continue? I know they got some guys in, but are we going to continue to see guys choose to leave Alabama because it's not the Alabama that they got recruited to?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I know it's just a bowl game and you don't want to put too much stock, but for a program that had very few opt-outs, I was disappointed in their bowl game performance against Michigan too. I'm a Kalen DeBoer believer. He is a great coach. He has been a great coach. Coaching in Alabama is a different animal, as we all know. The one thing I'll say is they recruited extremely well, so there's a lot of incoming talent. It's not like I'd be a lot more concerned about the future is if their recruiting took several steps back. I'd say they took a half a step back because you're going to do that when Nick Saban leaves, but they still signed the top two or three class. You know, I without knowing all of the reasons for the departures, you hear some of it's NIL, some of it's, some of them a lot of programs a starter could leave, and we on the outside, we could be like, ooh, that's a big loss. But maybe the staff said, hey, you might be a better fit somewhere else. I'm not making excuses for anyone. We just don't know. But it's clear Alabama is now just another SEC program. They are not Alabama on top of the SEC looking down on anyone. I think next year is going to be a really interesting season for them, again, because their talent level will be good as always, but they don't have the top talent across the board. I mentioned quarterback is going to be interesting. They got this guy, Keelan Russell, coming in, a true freshman, freshman from Texas, from Duncanville. State power there, but by some accounts, the national player of the year. Well, he started as a freshman, so there's some answers at the most important position there. But Kalen DeBoer's pretty much always had a really good offense. But I agree with you. It will be one of the more intriguing programs to watch next year.
Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic, joining us previewing the college football playoff. Mitch, as always, great stuff. Enjoy the games upcoming.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light joining us on the program. You can hear the Orange Bowl here on 102.5, 106.3. The game kickoff is at 6:30, 615-737-1025. We've gone this long without talking about the supreme ruler of football, Chad Brinker. Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports had some interesting comments about Chad Brinker and some of the things going on behind the scenes with the Tennessee Titans. We will play those comments coming up next. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.